number one sports site in the world.
Live from the Quicken Loan Studios of the Yahoo Sports Radio headquarters. Nighttime. This is the right time.
You're on the nighttime now.
It's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
All right, this is a weird one. This is a weird game. Game one of the NBA Finals, Golden State over Cleveland, 104-89. You know, I don't take a lot at a game one victories, all right? I don't. I learned my lesson back in the 1985 Finals. I know I've told you before where the Celtics throttled the Lakers in game one. I remember being a kid, being really excited, thought the Celtics were going to win the championship. I mean, after all, the Lakers just got swamped in game one, and then the Lakers won in six. You don't take things out of a game one. You watch how a team makes adjustments. Usually the home team does win. That's a point everyone's been making tonight. There's a lot of emotion in the building. Tonight, though, was a weird game, a weird outcome, because Golden State basically wins this game by 15 points without Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. Rarely do both of those guys struggle, and yet Golden State wins, not only wins this game, but they win by 15. And again, Steph Curry was 4 of 15, finished with 11 points. Klay Thompson was 4 of 12, finished with 9. Combined, they had 20. And they had 7 players in double figures. They got all sorts of guys involved. Sean Livingston had 20 points on 8 of 10 shooting, right? Draymond Green had 16 points and 11 rebounds tonight. So they're getting contributions from a lot of people. Andre Iguodala had 12 points. Leonardo Barbosa had 11. This is a team that is deep. So if you're Cleveland, what do you take out of this? What do you go into the locker room saying? Because if you're going to have a night where before the tip-off you say Steph Curry and Klay Thompson are going to have 20 points on combined 8 of 27 shooting, you would think you have a very good chance of winning the game. The Cavaliers actually had the lead in this one in the third quarter by 1 point, and then off to the races goes Golden State again. And this is a theme we've been saying over and over again about Golden State. The thing that makes them so good, well, one of the things that makes them so good, because when you have an MVP and Klay Thompson plays like an MVP, is their ability to get games out of hand quickly. That's what they do. It's the one thing that makes them so amazing, because you could literally watch a game and see how tight it would get. Cleveland would score some points, get the ball back, score some points again, tighten the game. Then they get it by one, and then boom. Here comes Golden State. They knock down some shots. They get some turnovers. They get some bad shots from Cleveland. And before you know it, it's back to an 8-point lead, a 9-point lead, a 10-point lead, an 11-point lead, because that's what they do. And they do it all the time. Now, if you're LeBron James, this was a weird night for LeBron James, because on the one hand, the box score was pretty good. 23 points, 12 rebounds, 9 assists, but he was 9 of 21. It was a good night for LeBron. I mean, I watched the game never feeling like LeBron was struggling or playing awful. There were just stretches of times where he wasn't effective. But the Cavaliers have got some work to do, and I expect them to get that work done. My question tonight, and we're going to ask this throughout the night tonight, if you went into this series saying, I like Golden State in 5, or I like Cleveland in 6, or I like Golden State in 7, did tonight change anything? Because it shouldn't, but it may have. If the Warriors can win with Steph Curry and Klay Thompson struggling and win convincingly, does that alter anything? You know, I'm pulling for Cleveland in this series. I think Golden State will win it, but I'm still pulling for Cleveland. I think this is the kind of game that you cannot let go of if you're the Cavaliers. You cannot let bench players beat you. And you can't let bench players beat you like the bench players beat them. There was nothing wrong with the big three tonight for the Cavaliers from a statistical standpoint. But they had some turnovers. They had bad shots. Kyrie Irving was 7 of 22. So the shot selection wasn't all that great at times. And sometimes it just missed. They didn't shoot the ball particularly well. They've got to do better at that. J.R. Smith was 1 of 3. But if you're the Cavaliers, you got beat tonight by the role players on Golden State. You can get beat by their stars. You got beat by Sean Livingston off the bench, Barbosa. You got beat by Andre Iguodala. You got beat by Draymond Green, who's one of the third star on that team. But Harrison Barnes had 13 points. I mean, this is the thing that Golden State should really feel good about. That the two big stars struggle and yet they win by 15. 800-777-2907. 800-777-2907. Well, of course, we'll dissect more into this game. Number one, Marcus Bertone will join us, Sacramento Bee, to talk about it from the Warriors' side of things. How did they pull this off tonight with their stars struggling? And what about Sean Livingston? And is he going to be a factor in these playoffs? Is he going to be a guy that is going to be someone now that we're going to be watching and paying more attention to in this postseason? Or is this one of those nights where the opportunities were there, so they just take advantage of the opportunities? But on any real given night for Golden State, the show is about Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. I mean, think about how rare it is that both of those guys struggle. Think about how rare it is that both of those guys couldn't find their shot. Again, 8 of 27, they were 4 of 13 from behind the arc. Combined total points of 20. I don't know what the odds are, if you could set odds for a game like that. But they'd be pretty high that you would get a game like that in game one. I said going into this series, and I still believe it, that Golden State got a lot out of that Oklahoma City series coming back. That feeling of that invincibility feeling we see some teams get sometimes, where they now know they're a tough out. That you really have to kill them to get them out of a series. And you have to put your foot on their throat, and nobody can, because they come up with ways to beat you. And I think that feeling, sort of that metaphoric feeling of, you know, that no one can knock us off. No one can take us off the ledge. You can push us to the edge, but you can't push us over it. And I think that was prevalent tonight, and I think it's going to be prevalent in this series. The Cavs have work to do. They've got to figure out better ways. Again, if you're a box score junkie, and I know a lot of you are, the box scores tonight for the big three for the Cleveland Cavaliers were pretty good. You know, double-double for Kevin Love. Kyrie Irving at 26. LeBron James was an assist shy of a triple-double. But when you look at the field goal shooting, it was off. It was off. 800-777-2907. Again, Marcus Bertone is at the bottom of the hour. Also, coming up tonight, I'm actually going to have some fun in the final show for the week. Remember earlier this week we talked about the series or the game that still gives you that sort of gut punch, even if it's years and years later, your favorite team has lost an emotional game. We did this thing where people were saying, oh, it was this World Series, or it was this Super Bowl, or it was this football game, or whatever. It was kind of a nice segment. Well, For the Win, segment of USA Today, actually gave the worst losses of every NFL team. I thought it was kind of cool that we did that earlier in the week, and then they had that. So we're going to have the NFC version coming up at in about half an hour from now. We're going to have the NFC side of things, and we're going to do the AFC side of things in hour number two tonight. So if you're a fan of a particular team, you want to pay attention, because you may absolutely disagree with the choices that were made. All right, again, 800-777-2907, your thoughts on this series. And I'm asking the question, anything tonight change your mind on how this is going to go? If you thought Golden State in five, does that make you go, yep, that solidifies my thought, Golden State in five? Or if you thought Cleveland in seven, does tonight change that? I will say it doesn't for me, because I don't put a lot of stock in game one, but a game like this was weird enough for me to start thinking, well, maybe unless I see something different from Cleveland, this could be some quick work. For 20 combined points for Thompson and Curry, for Golden State to win by 15, man, there's a lot going right tonight for Golden State. Again, 800-777-2907. All right, coming up next, we're going to get into a story that we did yesterday on Baker Mayfield and the Big 12, and how on Wednesday they ruled that if you were to transfer if you were a walk-on player and you transfer to another school within your conference, you would lose a year of eligibility. Baker Mayfield did that. He transferred to Oklahoma, where he was a walk-on with the Sooners. He lost a year of eligibility. They were trying to get that back. On Wednesday, they said, no, he's not going to get that back. On Thursday, they reversed course. We're going to talk about what that means and where did the pressure come from, and how did this change, and how good is it that the Big 12 finally has made a decision that benefits the student athletes? Before we get to that, I do want to thank all of you who reached out on this story. A lot of you who wrote in, you know, on Facebook and Twitter telling me about Oklahoma and Baker Mayfield and the situation behind it. Good stuff, and it's good to know that as fans, as passionate as you guys are, we'll pay attention to a story like that. We'll continue our conversation on Game 1 of the NBA Finals tonight, but we'll get into what the Big 12 did, and I think rightfully so for student-athletes in that conference. Again, Marcos Bertone coming up in 20 minutes on the Warriors' big win over the Cavs. This is Tony D, Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
I am in such a weird mood tonight. I don't know what it is. Like, I don't know if it's because the week comes to an end or I just haven't been, still living out of boxes in since the move. I don't know. I feel off. It's a weird feeling.
It's like your first work week is ending in a new place and now you're kind of like your first regular weekend in a new place.
Yeah, exactly. You know
really
how depressing?
Know
you know how depressing it is, though? Like, you move and you miss people, and
right.
You know, you go through that, you know. But when you look in, like, your living room and you see five huge boxes that you know contain just knickknacks and junk. And
you just want to throw them away.
You just... You know, well, I asked my wife, I said, what are we doing on Saturday? She goes, well, I thought we'd go to New York and, you know, go into the city and hang out. She goes, but we do have to get to those boxes. And I'm like, oh, I know what this is why I call my wife the Saturday killer. Like, I swear to God, I call her the Saturday because I'm like, because here's what will happen. She'll say, yeah, let's go into New York and maybe we'll take the kids to something and we'll go grab some pizza and hang out. We'll take the train in and whatnot. Okay. But we'll start on Saturday, and before you know it, she'll look up at the clock and go, oh, my God, it's 4. Oh, where did the day go? Where did the day go? Really? Really? Every time she does that, I go, really? Where did the day go? Like, you didn't have this plan from the beginning. Like, we'll get started on a project, and we'll tell everybody that, like, oh, we'll stop around 2 or 3, and then we'll just keep going through the project. So it's just a weird feeling. Like, I walk through the house, it's just boxes after boxes after boxes. But I was glad tonight to just sit and relax and watch game one of the finals. And I didn't have to do anything, and I didn't have to. That's the one thing about doing this job that's great. You don't have to, like, hey, I got to watch the finals. So I can't help. I can't help put together the bathroom upstairs. So. But a weird game tonight. I've been saying this tonight. Weird game. Just to see the way this played out. To get Steph Curry and Klay Thompson under control, like to have them have off nights, what an accomplishment. But you still lose by 15.
I mean, like,
I'm really curious. I really can't wait for game two on Sunday to see where this goes.
If I told you last night during the show, LeBron James is going to almost have a triple-double, Love and Kyrie scored enough points to make a difference, and Klay and Steph were held to 20 points combined, you'd be like, okay, Cavs won by 15 or 20.
Cavs won by 15. Yeah, absolutely.
And
absolutely.
Now I'm telling you tonight that no, those things all happen, but the Warriors won by 15. Your mind, you'd be like, no, there's no way. You would have bet me anything you had in your house, all your boxes that are sitting in the living room, you would have bet me, and I would have won them.
And this is why tonight with this game, this is why it's a weird game, because as I said earlier, you shouldn't take things out of game one, not in any series. Look what we did. Look how we overreacted with the Oklahoma City Thunder in that game against San Antonio, where they got blown out and everyone was like, see, there you go, Oklahoma City, and Kevin Durant better get out of town because he can't win there. And then they win the series. You can't take anything out of game one because adjustments get made. But I gotta think you gotta take something out of this. You have to take something out of this, which is the Warriors are so dangerous. Heck, even Sean Livingston can beat you if you're not careful. And that's what I think. I am reluctant to go down that road of, uh-oh, watch out. This is now a different Warriors squad that can respond when their stars are struggling. And this is an added thing that the Cleveland Cavaliers have to worry about. But I'm also cautious about, hey, teams watch film and they adjust and they sit around and they make changes, and Tyronn Lue is going to make a lineup change, or he's probably going to do something to help LeBron out even more. this is what my takeaway is tonight, which is don't take too much, but there's got to be something we can take out of this. Because, again, when Sean Livingston has got 20 points and there's seven players in double figures, and what, Steph Curry's not one of them? What, did he have nine? I can't even begin to contemplate that.
One thing that I would take away from this game, and it doesn't have anything to do with the starters or anything, it's the benches. Cleveland's bench has played well through the playoffs, but they haven't faced anything like they're facing now against this bench. So Cleveland obviously needs their bench to do anything. They didn't do anything tonight, but it's going to be really tough against clearly the best bench in the NBA.
It was 45 to 10.
Yeah.
Output, a 45 to 10 difference in bench scoring on the night tonight. And that is stepping up. I mean, that is really stepping up. I mean, I'd love to get the numbers on the Cavaliers bench shooting, but just not it. First of all, they didn't play as many minutes as the Warriors bench did, because I mean Iguodala played 36 minutes tonight and Livingston played 27. I think the most the Cavaliers bench got was a Shumpert at 17. But that, if you're Cleveland and you send out the bench to play with LeBron, they have to be able to help him out. Like not in the way the starters do, but still in an effective way. But Cleveland getting this game down to single digits and then actually taking the lead and then not being able to at least hold on to that for longer than 2 seconds is another factor I got, because Golden State will come at you in waves. They will hit you hard, and then they back off, and then they miss some shots, and then they get a little sloppy, and then you catch up, and then they hit you hard again, and then you make a little bit of a run, and then they blow your doors off. And that's what they do. They come at you in these waves. But Cleveland should be better than get a game back to at least single digits, or actually take a lead like they did, and then give it up and then get blown out again. Cleveland should have been better to hang on to that, and they weren't.
Just to compare the benches, the bench for the Cavs were 3 of 10, including 1 of 5 from three, whereas Sean Livingston was 8 of 10 by himself.
Right,
so that
exactly.
Just tells you everything you need to know about the benches.
God, it's crazy. And again, don't take much out, but take something out of it, because this is something that I think should still be digested on how Golden State did this tonight. Because that's what makes Golden State so interesting, because they have these two tremendous superstars, and when one's off, the other one's on, and when one, you know, Curry will get 39 and Klay will get 17, or Klay will get 39 and Curry will get 10. These were two guys that are the instrument of their offense, and they went 8 of 27 and they combined for 20 points, and Golden State won by 15 on a night, as you said, where LeBron had almost a triple-double. That is something to break down. Marcus Bertone joins us in about 6 minutes. We're going to ask him about this, because it's a new way for Golden State. It's a new way to see the Warriors. And here's why. Because I will bet you, if you went through every single box score, not only this year but last year, you will find very, very few games in which Steph Curry and Klay Thompson were ineffective. Now, you may find a game where Steph Curry didn't play and Klay Thompson was ineffective, or vice versa, but I bet you won't find 5 games in the last 2 years where both of these guys shot that poorly. And again, they win by 15. Game 2's on Sunday. Tyronn Lue is going to make moves. You know he is. LeBron's going to make moves. You know he will. But Golden State's got to feel great that they got it, not only a double-digit victory tonight, but their two stars didn't really contribute much. 800-777-2907, 800-777-2907. And then coming up in 20 minutes, you will want to hear what we've got for you. NFC teams, they're the worst loss in the team's history in the NFC. Agree or disagree with those? That's coming up in 20 minutes. But Marcus Bertone and how the Warriors pulled this off tonight. And Sean Livingston, his effectiveness tonight, where did it come from? We'll talk to him next. I am Tony D, and this is The Nighttime on Yahoo Sports Radio.
This is Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Working the third shift.
This is Tony D.
Once again, from the Quicken Loan Studios, here's Tony D.
Thanks Thanks for joining us as we continue to look at the NBA Finals. Game one, 15-point win by the Warriors. Steph Curry and Klay Thompson combined for just 20. Marcus Bertone joins us, Sacramento Bee, to give us his take on this game. How are you, my friend?
Doing well.
All right, so like as I said earlier, I thought this was a weird game tonight. To win by 15 with your two stars relatively ineffective, how did the Warriors pull this off?
Well, it's kind of like it reminded me of back in the old days, a heavyweight fight where, the bigger, stronger, more athletic fighter just in the end had more weapons at his disposal to beat, a game opponent. And I think that it has to be a really discouraging loss for Cleveland because, they, in a sense, they game planned it very well and that they were able to control being a relative term, clearly, but Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, in other words, not to let them take over the game as they have so often, and yet still to get run off the floor in the fourth quarter the way they did, it has to be really demoralizing for the Cavaliers because they had to feel like they did they executed the key piece of their game plan successfully, and they were beaten by Andre Iguodala. They were beaten by people who really shouldn't be beating them. I'm looking at the numbers right now. I mean, Steph Curry with 11 points, Klay Thompson with 9 points. I mean, you do that, you win, and they didn't. And so it's got to be a really discouraging loss for them, given the way they lost, and the way that they were just outworked when the game really counted. I thought was really telling.
You know how these game ones work. You get an outcome, and then it changes, and people make adjustments and whatnot. So I don't like to read too much into game one, but at the same time, I feel I have to, I got to read something out of this tonight because of the way Golden State won. Do you feel the same way? Do you feel like there's something that we can take out of this that is going to be something we can take into the series?
Well, I'm trying to temper myself because, the temptation now is to really feel like that Cleveland can't win this series, and I just hesitate to say that, and I think that in the third, they showed what they can do when they're really committed to clamping down defensively. In the first half, I really felt like that the Warriors had to be feeling great about things because they had so much more room on the floor to maneuver than they did against Oklahoma City. Oklahoma City was just smothering defense and, a few bounces here and there, and this might be an OKC Cleveland series. And so it seemed that the Cavs were only committed to that for one quarter. It also seemed that LeBron was settling for jumpers and was trying to get other people involved when the situation called for him to be more assertive.
I don't mean to interrupt you. Do you think he does that a little too much? Because this is one thing with LeBron that sometimes drives me crazy, where I feel like, just take over, LeBron. Who cares if you put up 40 shots? Just take the game over.
Well, I think in the past he has. I mean, you can't argue too much with a man who's been to the final 6 years in a row. I mean, that's getting to Bill Russell territory at this point. However, I think there were moments, particularly in the first half, that required him to not be settling for the jump shot and for him to be more assertive. At the end of, for most of the third, it seemed like, okay, we have a real fight here, and then it slipped away. Now, Andre Iguodala did a great job of guarding LeBron, too. We can't, that has to be acknowledged. His length, his athleticism really caused him problems. And, and the fact that, the Warriors bench was able to respond the way they did, I think was just a testament to how special this team is, and that they can figure out ways to beat teams on the fly, and they have the weapons to execute a course correction, which is, it sounds easy to say, but it's not, and they're a very special team that can do that, and very few teams can.
Do you think that? Well, I'll ask you this. What did Golden State take out of themselves in that series against Oklahoma City when they were pushed like they've never been pushed before and their backs were against the wall longer than they've probably ever been? When you win a series like that, is there a feeling of invincibility that gets added on to whatever all the stuff that you've done during the regular season?
Well, I think that there's a feeling of confidence in that the quality of opponents that Golden State had prevented any kind of complacency. And, they're a really proud team, and they were down 3-1, and they didn't want to be that team that won 73 games in the regular season and then didn't even reach the finals. And, the wins that they put up, particularly Game 6 in Oklahoma City, which is epic, and I think that it whatever complacency that the Warriors might have been feeling, it knocked them out of that and put them in a championship mindset. Now, their coach tonight, got angry with them because they let down at the beginning of the second half, and they let Cleveland back in the game. But, I think the overarching takeaway from this game is that when the Warriors are in the mood and when they really want it, they win. And I think that's got to be the most daunting obstacle for Cleveland going forward. It's just that realization that when they engage their opponent and their opponent is engaged, they go off. And that's what happened tonight.
Marcos Bertone, Sacramento Bee. Always great talking to you, my friend. Thanks a lot, as always.
My pleasure.
Yeah, Steve Kerr. I didn't know either. Two things about those clipboards. Either one, they're a lot more fragile than I think, or two, he's superhuman strong. He smashed that thing that looked like relative ease. Like, he didn't, like, I've tried to break things where I punch it and it doesn't break it, and I just keep punching it until, and then I want to break it, and then eventually I just put it over my knee. He's just talking to Luke Walton. He gets so angry, he punches it, and it shatters into a bunch of pieces. I mean, I don't know. Maybe they don't make clipboards like they used to. Maybe they are a little bit of a, like, cheap glass-like plastic. But this thing broke really quick. He's a strong dude, because that's tough. I'm surprised he didn't cut his hand or needed stitches or something like that. But that he makes a good point. So here's Steve Kerr getting angry because Golden State let them in. But as I said, earlier, it's just, this is the thing that blows me away with Golden State. Watch them. Don't get up. Don't use the restroom. Don't get a drink. Because the game, it'll be a 10-point lead in 30 seconds. That's how good they are. I like seeing Steve Kerr like that. How soon before Luke Walton follows suit in Los Angeles with the Lakers? Like, I learned from the best. Smash, chips all over the floor. You had to go pick those up, too. Can you imagine breaking your clipboard and then having to go pick up the pieces? Shouldn't you have somebody that does that? Now, Steve Kerr is a good dude. All right, coming up next. We talked earlier about those gut-punching losses of your favorite teams. Well, For the Win at USA Today has listed the loss for every NFL team. We'll tell you the NFC coming up next. Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
All right. Earlier this week, we asked you to give us your gut-punching loss of your favorite team, and for the win, decided to kind of go on with that theme. I think it was kind of a feeling with Oklahoma City and, you know, the Cavaliers trying to go to, you know, going to another finals in basketball and, you know, feeling like, all right, what are the losses that hurt the most? So for the win at USA Today, decided to give us every single, at least their version, every single gut-punching loss for every NFL team. So I thought we'd have a little bit of fun. We'll still talk about the NBA Finals and whatnot. And we're going to go over the NFC choices to see if we disagree or disagree with those. Coming up in the next hour at this time, so 1 hour from now, we're going to do the AFC. So we're going to start with the NFC North, because Adam's Chicago Bears is on the list. And I thought I'd let Adam guess the toughest loss in Bears history where he thinks for the win has chosen. So give me your thoughts on the Bears' gut-punching loss that they have picked.
Ooh, gut. I automatically go to the Super Bowl, but another one could have been just a few years back in the NFC Championship game against the Packers.
That is it. Ding, is it? Ding, ding.
Okay, and that is
Cutler
it. That's the game where he
That's the
injured.
Cutler injury.
Yes.
That's where everybody started. Now, I was in Denver at the time, and everybody started throwing out their anti-Cutler opinions right immediately after this one. Oh, he's such a wimp. You can't. Cutler's hurt. Oh, would he get a hangnail? And it turned out he was pretty hurt.
It was a sprained MCL, if I'm not mistaken.
So, yeah, that's what they chose, the 2010 playoff game against the Packers. Green Bay's toughest loss was, again, this is by far the win, 2014 playoffs against Seattle, where they led and the Seahawks came roaring back, had that two-point conversion. Remember, and then the was it the kickoff that they fumbled, or was it a punt that they fumbled? The Seahawks got the ball back on an onside kick. Minnesota's toughest loss was the 1998 championship game against the Atlanta Falcons. It set the Falcons to the Super Bowl. The Vikings that year were 15-1.
Yeah.
And we're supposed to go to the Super Bowl to play the Denver Broncos, but instead Gary Anderson, who never misses, missed a field goal, and that sent Atlanta to the Super Bowl. Detroit, they had to go all the way back to 1994 for the Lions, but they chose the 94 wild card game against the Packers. All right, in the NFC West, I loved this division, and I loved all the choices that they made for all of the teams in the NFC West, because they're all Super Bowl losses. In fact, they're the only division where all of the gut-punching losses were from the Super Bowl.
I think the Seahawks one's pretty easy, am I right?
Yeah, the Seahawks is very easy. Super Bowl 49 against New England. If they didn't have that game, I'd still couldn't remember a tough Seattle loss. I don't follow the Seahawks and their mediocre years in the 80s. Arizona's Super Bowl loss to the Pittsburgh Steelers, Super Bowl 43, Santonio Holmes catching that pass in the end zone where they had the lead on the Larry Fitzgerald touchdown where he just broke through the middle and caught the pass and went right into the end zone, and then the Steelers drove down the length of the field and scored the touchdown on Santonio Holmes' catch. So that was their gut-punching loss. St. Louis, now L.A. Rams, but they're using the St. Louis side of things. Their Super Bowl 31 loss to the Patriots. That was a weird Super Bowl because the Patriots were actually massive underdogs and nobody believed it. People felt after coming out of that game against the Steelers that the Patriots were the real deal. And no, you know, greatest show on turf and all of the accolades that the Rams got. There was a feeling that the Patriots defense was going to show up and be really good in that game. So it was surprising that the Patriots won that game, but not really, because people did expect the Patriots to put up a good fight. And San Francisco's loss in Super Bowl 47 to the Baltimore Ravens, where Jimmy Smith had that non-call pass interference as they were down in the end zone and trying to score. That was San Francisco's gut-punching loss. In the NFC East, the Philadelphia Eagles, the 2002 NFC title game against Tampa Bay, that sent the Buccaneers to the Super Bowl. And what was interesting about that game was Tampa Bay had never won a playoff game when the temperature was below a certain degree. But I can't remember if that game was above that mark. It was like 40 degrees or below it. But I think it was below it, because I know Rondé Barber had a really, really good game for the Buccaneers in that one. Washington, 2012 wild card against Seattle. Washington has a very long history. Washington has been around a long time. 2012 wild card game against Seattle. Remember this one where RG3 was left in the game? Mike Shanahan just left him in there to get beat up like a punching bag? and really set the stage for Kirk Cousins' rise in Washington. But a good year, a good season for RG3 kind of ruined on the field in that playoff game. The Giants, 2010 against Philadelphia, DeSean Jackson kind of with a walk-off punt return. My brother and I sent our father there for Christmas, an early Christmas present. We bought tickets to that game, gave it to him early, and said, hey, enjoy a Giants game on us. It goes down as one of the worst losses in Giants history. Well done, us. Dallas Cowboys, gut-punching loss, according to Ford the Win, 82 NFC title game against San Francisco, the catch by Dwight Clark. Let's go to the NFC South, Atlanta, the 2012 NFC title game against San Francisco, where they led 17-0. Tampa Bay, the 99 championship against the Rams. That was a good team. The Buccaneers had a good team in 99. Tough loss. The Rams were very, very good, high-flying offense, but they held the Rams. I think the score was like 10-9 in that game. That Tampa Bay defense did its job. The offense couldn't. Carolina, the Super Bowl loss to New England. John Casey kicking it out of bounds. That set up the Patriots to go down the field and get Adam Vinatieri field goal to win it. They actually came roaring back in the second half in that game. The New Orleans Saints was the 2011 playoffs against San Francisco. I thought this was interesting because I thought the Seattle loss that was brought up by one of our listeners earlier was worse than this. But the 2011 playoffs against San Francisco, where Alex Smith hit Vernon Davis with like, what,
wasn't that the one
10
where they
seconds
just went
to
back
go?
And forth?
Yeah, and then the Niners scored like in the final seconds, like
right.
I think it was 30 seconds on the clock or something like that. But Alex Smith hit Vernon Davis.
Like 50 to 45 or something crazy.
I think having a team like the Saints did coming off a Super Bowl year and going on the road to a 7-9 Seattle team and losing that game when Marshawn Lynch is running over you, I think that's worse. But that's what they've got. So, again, next hour, AFC. It's Tony D, Yahoo Sports Radio.